Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today we're going to tell you about Joe Cinque. And here's another wild one. Another one that's going to make you say, what the hell?
Yeah, because this one's crazy.
It is so wild. It makes you wonder what kind of world we live in. And I know all of our stories do to some extent, but sometimes you just can't wrap your brain around what you just heard. And this is one of those type of cases.
Yeah. No, this one right here, just watching and researching this one, I was just like, what the hell?
It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
And also, I also need to apologize in advance because this is a case out of Australia. And a lot of the coverage that we've watched on this, like any videos or anything that we watched, is like news interviews and things like that. They're all from people with accents. And I can't seem to get my mouth to fix itself to say some of these pronunciations because I'm a little redneck. So I'm going to try my best and apologize to anyone offended by my redneckness. Okay?
Sure.
That's my disclaimer.
Yeah, wait till I start talking.
Well, all right, let's get into it then. Now that we've set it up so well, we're talking about Giuseppe Joe Cinque. We're going to call him Joe, because everybody did. And he was a handsome guy with lots of friends. He was very charismatic and close to his parents, like really close. In fact, he lived with them. He played tennis, cricket, soccer. His mom said that he couldn't sit still. He was always doing 2 to 3 things at a time. He had lots of friends and was very social. And he was out with friends at a club in Newcastle in 1995, and he met a girl, Anu Singh. She was 22 years old, extroverted, dominant, and loved attention. She also had behavioral issues.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And the two hit it off because, you know, who don't like a little crazy? And they started a long-distance relationship. She did, however, at this time, have a boyfriend, Simon, who she had been with for like 3 years. And she actually became pregnant at one point and terminated the pregnancy, which added to her emotional instability. She started taking recreational drugs like acid and cocaine, trying to cope. She had even taken a year off of school. But Simon found out about Joe, and he broke up with Anu. She moved to Canberra to attend Australian National University and pursue her law degree. But then she was very homesick.
Yeah, and Joe, he would actually drive, you know, to her every Friday, which was like a 4-hour drive or close to that. And, you know, he'd stay until Monday morning, and he would get up and leave super early in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd have just enough time to drive back home and get ready for work.
Yeah, he was completely enamored with her. She totally hung the moon. But, like I said, who don't like a little crazy sometimes? Now, his family was seeing signs of things that they didn't like. His mom said that they ate dinner every night at 6 p.m. And once she started to see Anu, she would call every night at about 6:10 to 6:15, purposely interrupting dinner. Then Joe would leave and get on the phone with her and spend like hours on the phone with her. The mom answered the phone several times and reminded Anu that it was dinner time and she needed to call after 7. But Anu just kept doing what she wanted to do. His dad said that if he and Joe were somewhere and they were talking and Anu saw that they were talking, she would come over and take over, steering Joe away and having her own conversation with him. She wanted to be the only person who had his attention. And when his mom confronted him about her concerns, he told her not to make him choose between them because he said, I love you, but she needs me. So here we go with this savior complex again. Now, Joe ended up moving to Canberra to live with Anu. She was sick and trying to take amphetamines, but instead of helping, they caused paranoia. She would think that things were crawling under her skin. She told her mom that she felt like her head was sitting on top of somebody else's body. She went to the doctor, who said there was nothing physically wrong with her and that it was all psychological. She was also obsessed with her physical appearance. She spent hours in the gym, developed insomnia, and became bulimic, experimenting with different purging techniques. She said that Joe had mentioned Ipecac, And that's something that you drink to induce vomiting, like if you've ingested poisons or things like that. So she started taking that. Then she said she thought her body was rotting from the inside out. I mean, it couldn't have been because she barely ate and stuffed her body full of drugs instead of, you know, foods and vitamins. It was Joe making her sick because he had mentioned Ipecac. None of his family believed that Joe would ever tell her about Ipecac as a dieting method, the way Anu was making it sound. They don't even think he fully knew what it was to begin with. He was more about love yourself for who you are kind of person, not take this drink to make yourself throw up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, it was, you know, he had mentioned Ipecac in conversation with other people and she overheard this. And she tries to say that it was his fault.
Yeah, like he gave her the idea.
Yeah, exactly. Like he gave her the idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, he moved up. You know, he had moved in with her to help her, not to hurt her, but she blames him.
She blames everybody but herself on everything all the time. You'll see that.
Yeah.
Her parents made her see a psychiatrist. Now, they were very on top of this, like, as much as they could be, I think, from being far away from her. But I do want to throw that out there, that they were trying to help. So they made her see a psychiatrist, and they did prescribe her some medication to help, but Anu refused to take it because weight gain was one of the side effects. She started talking about suicide with other people so she could end the troubles of her being sick. One person even told her that if she felt like that was something she needed to do, then she should do it. So that just goes to tell you how persuasive she was and how much she actually believed herself that she was sick to, like, beyond repair, like that there nothing was going to help her. And she was convincing other people of this. And keep in mind that throughout this story, most of this is coming from Anu. No one has really spoken on her behalf, so take from it what you will. But Anu became convinced that she had AIDS. She was even mad that she had it and Joe didn't. So she planned on putting some of her infected blood onto his toothbrush to try to infect him. Girl, you nasty. She had an AIDS test done, though, and it was miraculously negative.
Oh, go figure.
Right?
Crazy.
You're just going to chime in with that every time. Crazy. She started then telling people that she wanted to go on a rampage and kill Joe, her ex, Simon, and all the doctors that couldn't diagnose her of her mystery illness she didn't have. She even said, "I've studied psychiatric texts, and it wouldn't be too hard to convince someone that you're insane." I keep saying that she told people instead of friends because she really didn't have any friends. She had one girl that did whatever Anu would say, but the majority of the people around her were just classmates or acquaintances. Most people didn't like that she was so attention-seeking. And to that point, that could be why no one took her talk of suicide or her rampage seriously. Okay, I'm going to try to do this. But her friend, Madhavi Rao, was always right there, ready to help Anu do whatever she needed to do. And from this point on, I'm going to call her Rao because I can't say Madhavi without trying to make a fake accent to do it. I'm not going to lie. So I'm just going to have to call her Rao. So
the two went to the library and researched suicide and suicide assistant methods.
Yeah, because Rao was, she was one of those people that was convinced that this was the best thing for her. If she wanted to kill herself to avoid this disease, kind of like a Robin Williams situation, then she was right there for it. But I don't know why she would be right there for her taking Joe out with her.
Yeah, well, that's just two crazies together.
Yeah, feeding off each other.
Yep.
I agree. Now, in September and October of 1997, she was talking about trying to get a gun to do it. But she changed her mind because it's not as easy to get guns in Australia as it is in the United States. So she moved on to heroin. Some people have said that it was kind of not offered to her, but like the suggestion was made to her that heroin would be a better way to go because then it's like quicker or something and you don't have to worry about missing. You don't, I mean, just some people say she was convinced by other people that heroin was the best way. She might have just been like, okay, this would be my best way, but we don't know. She blames everybody for everything, so it's hard to say. She had also described that she didn't want to leave Joe behind, not because he would be devastated at the loss, but because she had also read and heard about people who had moved on after a loved one ends their life, and they go on to marry and have families. She didn't want Joe to do that. She really wanted to punish him for mentioning the Ipecac that made her so sick. She figured she could get Rohypnol, or roofies, that's the date rape drug, to sedate Joe and then go through with the murder-suicide plan. The thing about this is that she was telling people about this murder-suicide, but made everyone believe that Joe was in on it, that they had made some kind of pact. She was also telling some people that she was going to use the roofies on Joe so he would pass out and not be able to stop her when she committed suicide. So she was giving people two different stories. And they were able to get about 15 roofies from a girl that they knew. She was like a fellow classmate. And the girl even told her if she was going to take the roofies and heroin together, she would only need one pill. Another fellow student actually sold heroin. So Anu and Rao went to him and bought $250 worth. He educated them on overdosing, how to inject yourself, and how to inject someone else. They all injected each other to practice, and he would pre-fill the syringes for her. Now she came back and got $500 worth, and when he asked why she wanted so much, she said, "Someone's coming with me." So he didn't know about Joe. He just thought he was trying to teach her how to kill herself, which this is a problem. Like, how is this not a problem?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, she's sitting there telling all these damn people that she's going to do this and that, you know, they're both in on it or whatever. I mean, and nobody calls anybody. Nobody says anything. Nothing.
Oh, no. And it's about to get worse.
Yeah.
Because having what they needed now, they decided to throw a farewell dinner party. And they invited several people, including fellow law students. Even neighbors who were practically strangers to this dinner party on October 20th. All of these people knew that after this dinner, shit was going down. Rao was even showing off her track marks from where they had practiced. Only one person didn't know what was really going on, and that was Joe. But at the party, everyone said nothing seemed off. Anu and Joe were affectionate and pleasant to everyone. All was good. After everyone left, Anu crushed up some of the roofies and put them in Joe's coffee. He passes out, and she gets the syringe that, like I said, was pre-filled for her by her dealer. But it was so concentrated that she actually wasn't able to use it. It wouldn't come out. The next morning, when Joe wakes up, he feels like he has a pretty big hangover, but that's probably because he drank quite a bit the night before at dinner, so it wasn't alarming. When people at the dinner party see that Anu and Joe are still alive, they assumed it was because of Anu's need for attention that she was going around saying she was going to hurt herself, but she was not going to actually do it. But she was also not done yet.
Yeah, she sets up another dinner party for Friday, October 24th, just 4 days later.
Yeah, and I don't think I mentioned it, so let me reiterate that at this dinner party, nobody mentioned to Joe or asked questions.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Nobody said shit.
Nobody said a damn thing to Joe. So he's completely in the dark.
Yeah. And he's just going about it like, oh, it's just a dinner party.
Yeah. Just hanging out with Anu's friends.
Yeah. Hey, people I don't know.
And he was that guy. He was so charismatic and so fun loving. He was just like, cool, dinner party. Let's go.
And nobody said nothing.
I would have so many questions. Maybe that's just me being nosy, but I would have been like, hey, how'd you come to this decision? You have no other choices? Like, what are we talking about here? Nobody said a word. Now, they told people for this second dinner party that it was for real this time. So people came back. I don't know if it is because these people are really morbidly curious or if they just like getting free food because they are college students, most of them. Now, Joe comes home from work to about 10 people in his house, and he didn't know about this. But he just turned on his charm and took it all in stride, like we said, just no big deal. He was used to things coming out of left field, being with Anu. And again, they were pleasant and affectionate all night. Everything seemed okay. And again, no one says anything. Joe's going around talking to people, telling them about his new car he just bought and that he was about to go on vacation to Queensland. So he's talking about the future. Why at a suicide party are you talking about your future and buying cars and shit? I don't understand it. The last one to leave the party was, of course, Rao. And she didn't leave until about 6 a.m. Saturday morning. Rao did tell her roommate that Anu roofied Joe and tried to inject him with the heroin, but he didn't die. Did the roommate say anything to anyone? No. That night, Anu called a friend. Shocker. And told him, we say friend, but it's not really a friend. And told him that she was worried about Joe sleeping for 15 hours straight after she roofied him. Part of this actually got accidentally recorded on his answering machine. And at one point, Joe takes the phone from Anu and tells this guy that he's fine. He's just a little tired. Nothing to worry about because this is the kind of guy he is. No big deal. I'm fine. I'm great. Poor, poor Joe. Now later on, still on Saturday, Rao comes over to bring food to them and her and Anu get into a fight. This is another kicker. Anu accused Rao of drugging Joe. Like, I can't with this girl. So Rao leaves and Anu roofies Joe again, then injects him with heroin. The next morning, we're now on Sunday, she goes to Rao's and picks her up, bringing her back to the house. Rao said that Joe was on the bed, sleeping, and he was a little blue, like color-wise, not down. The girls go to the ATM, and Rao withdraws $250, but they get into a fight again, and Rao walks home, while Anu goes back to the dealer and gets that $250 in heroin. She called Rao over and over and over until she finally agreed to come back to Anu's house. Joe was unconscious on the bed still, so Rao went to another person's house and told them that Anu said that Joe had woken up the night before, and while awake, he had told Anu he was going to leave her. So she roofied him again and shot him up again.
And finally, on Sunday afternoon, roughly 36 hours since the last dinner party ended, Anu called the girl she got the roofies from, begging her for help.
Yeah, so we're 36 hours in now that she has been drugging him with roofies and heroin.
Over and over again.
On repeat.
Yep.
Ugh.
Crazy.
So, here you go. So Joe at this point had been vomiting blood, taking one breath every 10 seconds, and was worse blue, like turning more and more blue. The girl told her to call 000, which is their version of 911. But Anu said if they were able to revive Joe, that he would be mad at her.
No.
Yeah. And the girl told her she could either have an angry boyfriend or a murder charge. Take your pick.
I would do angry.
Yeah, I'll take an angry boyfriend for 100, yeah. Alex.
But in her case, she'd probably get angry boyfriend and attempted murder charge.
Yeah, who knows what they do over there? Because when you get to the end of the story, it only gets worse.
Yep. No, it sucks.
So Anu finally calls emergency services. And this is one of those 911 calls or 000 calls that you just want to reach through the phone and shake a person. Anu tells them her name is Olivia. When the operator asks for the address, Anu says stuff like, he's vomiting everywhere. Blood. Is that a bad sign? Just give him the damn address. That's the first thing you should give. If you ever have to call 911, the first thing you should do is give an address so they can start people there. Then they'll ask you what's going on. You know what I mean? But no, she was giving them the wrong name. She then started giving them the wrong address. So she was stalling, obviously stalling as much as she could. And reports are that this 000 call was around 20 minutes long. The result is that they were not able to revive Joe, and he sadly passed away. Joe's mom and dad said that on Sunday evening, They made tea and waited for Joe's regular call home. By 5 o'clock, when Joe hadn't called, his mom called him. A cop answered the phone and told her to hold on. And right at that moment, like movie-style timing, there was a knock at her door. When they said they needed to talk to them about Joe, his mom told them they didn't have to say anything more. All mom said was, she killed him, didn't she? They already knew. Now, since Anu and Rao were so open about the plan, police arrested them both, like, immediately. Originally, they were going to be tried together, but the court decided to try them separately so that the evidence against Anu didn't sink Rao's ship. At Anu's trial, they said that evidence would be presented and she would cover her face with her hands and her shoulders would shake like she was crying because of all this evidence they were talking about. But then you could see her peeking out in between her fingers like a 2-year-old just to make sure people were seeing that she was grieving. She was tried for murder, but she would eventually be convicted of manslaughter because of diminished responsibility as a result of her mental illness. She was sentenced to 10 years in prison. During her incarceration, she was allowed to complete her master's in criminology on a day pass, meaning that she got to leave the prison every day to go to a regular class for criminology after murdering someone. And let me break this down for you. She was found guilty in April of 1999. She was released in October of 2001. Go, so math that out. That's 2 years. That's it. 2 years for torturing a man for 36 hours until he died. And she got her master's in criminology.
Yeah. And then, you know, she was arrested for smoking weed in 2004 and served 3 months in jail for that.
Yeah. Just, I mean, she's just still out there doing whatever.
Yeah.
And what... Okay, a lot of this pisses me off. I was about to say what pisses me off, but a lot of this pisses me off. But if you can be convicted of something because of diminished capacity and get a lower sentence, why are you then allowed to get a degree in criminology?
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand is why they allow her
to go to school.
To go to school and get this. I mean, that was just nuts.
She should have been in psychiatric treatment, not going to class. That was a failure on their part, to me, anyways. So in 2009, she got her doctorate from the University of Sydney. Her thesis was about women in crime, titled Offending Women Toward a Greater Understanding of Female Criminology.
Oh, now she's Dr. Murder.
Oh, Lord. Dr. Murder. I need to quit singing into this. I don't know what the voice is.
Because I'm not going to edit it.
Oh, my God.
That's Stan.
Edit it. See what I put up with? And it gets better because she met a new man while she was on trial. He was another inmate. And they used to pass notes through the guards and played basketball at lunch. And they've been together ever since. Once she was released, she moved in with her parents. So yay for that. Once he was released, he moved 10 minutes away from her so that they could see each other regularly. In an interview in 2017, he was asked if he worried that she might kill him one day. And he said, ever since I met Anu, it's been, you know, you might wake up with a needle hanging out of your arm. And I'd say, yeah. And if I wake up with a needle hanging out of my arm, I wake up. And if I don't wake up, well, I don't wake up. They sound like a perfect match.
Two crazies.
Crazy meets crazy. Anu did an interview for a TV program so she could apologize to Joe's family. But when they showed Joe's mom the tape of it, she said, she better not come near me. I never, ever forgive her. I call you the devil and you are the devil. Monster. You have destroyed my family. You have killed the most precious thing I have in my life. I don't want to see your face anymore. Go away.
Yeah, I can't blame her.
No, she's lucky that's all she said. Ooh,
devil.
The devil. She called her the devil so many times.
Yep.
In so many interviews, it's like, she's the devil. Because they don't really do a lot of interviews, but when they do, it's the same. Yeah. Devil, devil, devil.
And now she's Dr. Devil.
Yeah, Dr. Devil. So Now, remember she had a little partner in this, Rao. Well, she was tried for murder, manslaughter, attempted murder, and administering a stupefying drug. She was found not guilty. She has since moved to America and started a family. So they did nothing to her.
Surprise, surprise.
I know. So Anu, who actually does it, gets, you know, 2 years, basically. And the person who helped her gets nothing. Just gets to walk away.
Oh, they probably was like, oh, she was pressured into helping her.
To help her kill somebody?
Yeah, she's like, oh, she was pressured into doing it. It's peer pressure.
Peer pressure? Peer pressure makes you smoke a joint.
Well, they was doing heroin.
Yeah, together.
Exactly.
She was over there showing off her track marks at the dinner party.
Peer pressure.
No. I do not give you that. No. Nope. And the question I had was, could they not have tried her for accessory to murder? Because that's pretty much what it is. And so I had to look it up because I don't know Australia. And I saw that they do have accessory to a crime, where a person can be charged in the same indictment as the principal offender if they meet one of the four criteria. So it's counseled or procured another person to commit an offense. Yep. Aided another person in committing an offense. Yep. Did or omitted to any act for the purpose of enabling or aiding another person to commit an offense. Yep. Became an accessory to an offense after the fact. During. She was doing it during the offense. She was there the whole time. Helped to research it all the way to carrying it out.
Yeah, and then she came back.
So she met to me.
She came back twice. She brought him food and then she brought him the money.
It was her $250 that bought the heroin that killed him.
Yeah.
Because that last dose is what put it over the edge. And it was her money that bought it, and she knew what it was being used for. But they're saying because she didn't actually buy the heroin herself, she didn't inject Joe herself, and she didn't kill Joe herself or was even there when it happened, they say. She did not aid in this crime. That's what the court said.
She didn't help her with the research.
They did everything together.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. No. This right here all boils down to is what I think it all boiled down to is these girls' families had a lot of money and they knew where to put that money in order to get these, you know, to get these charges dropped or whatever. That's what I feel.
I don't have actual figures, but I do believe that both come from wealth. And I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, Anu's parents are both doctors. So yeah,
exactly.
It fits.
That's what I'm saying.
You called that one for sure. So like I said, they're saying that she did not aid in the death of Joe. But when you know what's going to happen, you go with them to buy it. You pay for it. She's even the one who got the roofies. Like, she's the one who got the roofies, not Anu. And then you helped sedate them and all that stuff. You aided. So I don't know what happened there, and I can't wrap my brain around it. But that's where we are today, is that they're both free, doing whatever they want, and Joe's not.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks, especially for Joe's family, because he was taken way too early.
And a lot of his friends
and just because of something stupid and, you know, because of a crazy-ass girlfriend, because she blamed him.
It was her mental illness, and we're not talking shit on mental illness.
No, but I mean, it's just there's a point, you know, where all these damn people, they seen what was going on, and they never said anything.
Because like we said in the Johnny Lewis story, you, if you're going through a mental episode, you don't know that you're going through a mental episode. It's normal for you, but everyone around you sees it.
Yeah.
And nobody did anything.
I mean, you know, depression looks... You know,
different.
It looks different. I mean, it could be a smile on a person's face.
You're damn right. And also, I didn't mention in here, I don't know why, but Joe's friend said that he was actually leaving Anu. Like, he bought that car, and that was the trigger for her. She knew he was going, and that's why she started this whole thing into motion, was because she's saying it's because he told her about the Ipecac, and that's what caused her physical problems.
Yeah.
But his friends say no, that it was him leaving. He had like something about his luggage, like maybe he had bought new luggage or whatever. He was like, he had a date book and he had circled that Sunday, the day that he died. He had actually circled that day and put move day. So his friends are fully convinced that he was leaving, and that's why she did it. Yeah. That she made all this other stuff up just to...
I can believe it.
Yeah.
She's crazy.
Speaking of mental illness, if you or anyone you know needs help, please contact the National Lifeline by calling or texting any message to 988. And this is for everybody. If you see someone having a mental crisis, please call.
Yep, that's it for this one. We appreciate you guys listening. Catch us on the next one.
Bye.